Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. Welcome. We are here to make psychology more understandable with tips for you, your family, and your friends to make your lives easier. Welcome back. I have been off of the air for a few weeks now as we have made the transition from Skid Row Studios to WePlayRadio.com. So we welcome you, and if you're new listeners, new subscribers, we are thrilled to have you on board. We hope you really enjoy the new format. We also have prior shows from SkidRowStudios.com where we were at home for about 4 years, and those are on iTunes Store. So check out the older podcast also. We have some great things in the archives, so welcome. My special guest this evening is being Skyped in from El Paso, Texas, and this is Ileana Herdani, and she is a licensed professional counselor who is also working on her PhD. Tonight, we are talking about healthy and loving couples, what we all aspire to when we are in relationships, right? So welcome, Ileana. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you, Julianne.
So what is, in your opinion, a healthy couple?
Oh, that's an easy question to cover. I think a healthy couple, it's really defined by the couple. When both people can tell we are happy and we trust each other and there's a sense of friendship and there's a sense of this person has my back, yet I still have my own individual self. I don't have to sacrifice who I am to be in a relationship. I still can be who I am, and yet being who I am gets enhanced by being with this other person. So that would be kind of a general, but I think each couple has to define it for themselves. And it's a question that each couple should ask themselves. How healthy is my relationship?
Right, and how many couples actually do that? I mean, I think at certain points, they probably do, like at the beginning of the relationship. And we're going to talk about the different stages of relationships. And one of the techniques that you specialize in, which is called imago therapy. So can you tell us a little bit about what imago is about?
Yes. So we're going to talk about the stages of the relationship. There's 7 stages, and they're not necessarily linear, but they are very well defined in a relationship. And the imago concept and communication model was developed by Harville Hendricks, and it really helps people go to the core of the issues. It helps them communicate about issues that are hot topics and difficult to talk about without having to immediately go into a battle or war zone. So it's a model that helps couples stay connected and stay emotionally calm throughout the process so that they're able to hear the other person as well as express themselves.
That's really important. And I think a lot of times when couples get into relationships, they're doing this dance of talking and listening and hopefully not talking on top of each other, because then really neither one of them are listening to each other. They just want to be heard, right?
Absolutely. And in the beginning, in the beginning of a relationship, this comes very easy because we are flooded by love hormones. Nature wants us to connect. So once we find that person that we feel a connection with, nature says, okay, let's flood them with hormones, and we are just awesome, and the other person is awesome, and it comes easy. The speaking and the listening comes very easy, but once those love hormones, that love potion fades away, that's when the real selves come out, and we become a little bit more who we are in a way, which is a good thing, but it can be a little bit disappointing too to the other person, who is like, who is that person really?
Yeah, and I would imagine at that point a lot of people start breaking up then, when they start seeing who the real self is. They're not as turned on by that person, right?
Absolutely right. And that is exactly the job of those love hormones, is to turn us on. But we can't remain turned on forever. It's just very unrealistic. we are in a stage of infatuation. It's not a real state, so it wouldn't last. It never does. Unfortunately, a lot of people bet on those first month, and it can last up to a year, sometimes even two, depending on how the relationship plays out. So people bet on those first moments in the relationship and think that's how it's going to be forever, and it really will not be. And then they make up choice. They end up making choices that are very life changing. They get married, they have children, and then it makes it much harder later on.
And does it make any difference at what age the couple is at for that to happen, that they're more likely to get into that infatuation stage and stay there and then make some really life-changing decisions at that point when there's still all those hormones are going off?
Yes, it happens at any stage. We would hope that people, when they're older, they're a little wiser, and maybe they have had already a relationship or two and have some experience and would use that. But honestly, Julianne, if people don't have some awareness and some sense of insight and ask exactly that question, how healthy is my relationship, or what can I learn from my previous relationships, they tend to repeat the same patterns again, and especially the unhealthy patterns.
So what do you do for working with people who are caught up in doing that relationship cycle, and then they're in and out of relationships, and then they can't understand why? How would you talk to them about getting out of that first stage and going on to the next stages so they can have long-lasting relationships?
Well, one of the things that I do is I do a very good assessment. So when a couple calls me, I usually have them come in, and in the first session, I just let them talk. I just observe their dynamic, who talks more, who talks less, who interrupts who, what's the volume of the, what is the story. I just kind of let them talk so I get a good idea of where they're at. If I feel that there's a lot of issues, I usually encourage them to come individually afterwards. I actually just saw a couple today that I encouraged them to do this. So I then see one spouse individually and then the other spouse, so that they can share everything that's in their mind, in their hearts, in their head, and I can even get a better picture. And that can happen one time or maybe more, depending on how it goes, depending on how loaded they are. And once I have a feeling that they kind of calm down and that they feel heard by me, so I kind of do that role in that moment. I validate them. I have empathy. I listen to them, and kind of I'm there with them. Then I bring the couple in as a couple. And that's when we start with the imago dialogue and start working through the issues using the dialogue.
So if you assess a couple and you bring in one partner and then the other partner, and then you start assessing, well, maybe these are like long-standing individual personal issues. How would you handle something like that? Would you refer one of them out or both of them out for their own personal counseling? And then you would just do the couple's counseling?
Absolutely. Depending on the issues, one of the things that I do in the assessment as well is kind of get a good background history, because we do bring our family history into a relationship. There is a little bit of repetition there if we don't do a good work. That's why you often see people that grew up in abusive families, they end up in abusive relationships, even though they don't want it, but it kind of feels familiar. You know, that's what I know. That's what I grew up with. So they tend to be attracted. And if they get attracted to somebody who's not abusive, they turn the relationship into an abusive relationship because that's what they're used to. So I will absolutely refer them out. But it depends on the issue, because some issues might actually create that bond with a couple and create more intimacy. So if I feel that the couple has a lot of strength and resiliency, I might actually encourage them to work their individual issues through the relationship.
I would imagine that could be pretty tricky because
it can be.
Yeah, because there's so many people that say, hey, I didn't get into this relationship to fix you. I was under the assumption that we were having a good time. And then all of a sudden it takes this turn and they're caught off guard.
Yeah, I really try to see if there's empathy. If there's empathy in this relationship, if I can see that they like each other, they want to be together, they have a true intent of making this work, and they're actually able to, even if it's not a lot, to put themselves into the other shoes, then you have a good shot. If they are too activated, too scared, too nervous, too much in their reptilian brain, then no, then you're absolutely right. It would be kind of tricky.
Okay. And can you explain what a reptilian brain is?
Yes. I actually explain that to every client that comes in my office, because I think it's such an important aspect of ourselves. So when we were cave people, when we were living way back in the caves, we were very primitive and simple people, and our basic jobs of the day were find food that I can kill, that's not going to kill me, and stay safe, stay alive, and reproduce. These were kind of the jobs of the day. So we didn't need a very sophisticated brain, but we needed a good brain to keep us alive. So we had a brain that was extremely fast, not very precise, because I'd rather mistake a branch for a snake than the other way around. And it was a brain that could go in alert mode real quickly. So that brain basically only knew 5 options. So kind of if I'm out there and a saber-toothed tiger is coming my way, I have to evaluate real quickly if I can either go for the kill, and that's the fight mode, so I'm going to fight the tiger, or if I feel I don't have weapons but I can run, I'm going for the flight, so the fight or flight. If none of those options are viable, I'm going to go for the freeze. I'm going to pretend I'm a tree. Hopefully the tiger thinks I'm a tree. Or I'm going to go for the flop. You can see that still in the animal world. I'm going to pretend I'm dead. And the newest one that was actually uncovered quite recently is called friend. They want to keep the F theme going. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be really nice to my enemy just to stay alive. So these are all survival mechanisms. And as we evolved as human beings and developed a prefrontal cortex and a thinking brain and a smart brain that understands values and ethics and morals and right and wrong, we still have that little reptilian brain inside of us, and it gets activated when we feel threatened. And a threat could be my spouse looked at me the wrong way. And in that moment, our smart brain goes out the window. The reptilian brain takes over. It's fight, flight, freeze, flop, or friend. And we become a little primitive in those moments. And we end up behaving in ways that maybe next day we wake up and say, oh, how stupid. I know better. But the problem is in that moment, you don't have access to your smart brain. And police reports are full of those.
Oh, yes, they are. And I tell you, domestic violence situations they can be deadly. And I used to work in the domestic violence shelter in Long Beach, and very difficult. I mean, law enforcement really are very careful about approaching those situations because they can get out of hand really quick. So yes, that whole reptilian brain, that survival mode goes so overboard, and the adrenaline rush comes up, and you know, people get crazed out for the time being. So yeah, it's scary to not have that in place or have some kind of a mechanism that can just dampen that so that people don't react to each other. They understand when their red flags come up, and then I'm sure that's some of the tools and techniques that you work with these couples is learning those emotional regulation tools, correct?
Absolutely. So I tend to give them a little bit of a teaching moment, and I try to understand, and everybody I tell this says, oh my God, that resonates so much, and I hate myself when I do these things or when I'm in that moment. So it's not an excuse, but it's a way of understanding that that's part of the human condition. So now how do we learn to control our reptilian brain or not let it come up and out that quickly, only when it's a real dangerous situation. So if I'm in a real scary situation, I want my reptilian brain to kick in. And I want that adrenaline rush so that I can hopefully save myself, but not when I'm talking to my spouse about him or her not taking out the trash.
Exactly. You have to keep it under wraps. It needs to only be coming out momentarily and pretty rare occasions, really. But I think people are more apt to react nowadays because they have too many stressors on them or whatever the case may be. But it seems like we hear more and more stories every day about people snapping just spontaneously and atrocious things happening. So it's really important to get that reptilian brain in order and under control.
Absolutely. Yes, it really is a very important. So that's one thing that I really stress to my couples and work with them, even my individual clients.
So Ileana, we are going to take a short break and then we'll be right back with Healthy and Loving Couples.
The Chicago School of Professional Psychology offers numerous psychology, behavioral, and health-related science graduate degrees at three campuses, Los Angeles, California, including branches in Westwood and Irvine, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C., and online. The Chicago School prepares students to meet the ever-changing mental health needs of society through classroom experience and real-world training. The Chicago School Counseling Centers in Irvine and Westwood provide caring, confidential, and affordable psychological services to individuals and their families. For more information, visit thechicagoschool.edu.
And thank you to the Chicago School of Professional Psychology for sponsoring Psych One-on-One on weplayradio.com. My special guest this evening is Ileana Hardani from El Paso, and she is a licensed practitioner. And we are talking about healthy and loving couples. And her specialty is imago therapy for couples. And Ileana, can you give us a kind of an overview of how you would start using the imago therapy with a couple?
Yes, I would love to. So I first asked them, if they would like to learn a new way to communicate and if that is a good moment to do it. And that already is the first step. So once they say yes, they're willing, I say, I just did the first step with both of you. So it is very important that when you want to talk to your partner, you kind of want to make an appointment if it's an issue that you know it's going to be a delicate issue, because your partner might be coming back home from work stressed out and you're ready to talk and they're not going to be a good listener. So you kind of want to say, listen, I need to talk to you about something. When is a good time? And let your partner give you a good answer and kind of schedule an appointment so that both of you can come to the conversation ready. And then once they agree, I have them actually turn towards each other. So I have them look to each other. And that in itself is already interesting, because some couples, you can notice they are used to that and it's no big deal. Others get a little bit nervous and antsy about that. So that for me is also some information of how connected and disconnected they are at this point. And then the second step is I have them choose a speaker and a listener. And I usually let the couple choose. And so once they choose their roles, I tell the speaker that the role of the speaker is to speak, but that he or she is going to speak in paragraphs and that I'm going to be there monitoring. And the listener, I tell the listener that at that point in time, the only job that the listener has is to listen and to mirror back what the speaker said. So I encourage the listener to imagine they have like a external brain, you know, like we have an external hard drive for our computers, and to download everything that's in their brain into that other brain and really, really have an open mind to receive the information that the speaker is going to bring to the table. They don't have to agree with that information. They don't have to analyze it. They don't have to even keep it at the end of the conversation. They just have to, in that moment, kind of download that software into their computer and just be open and that's it. No judgment, no assumption, and I'll be there also to help them. And that's when we start with the dialogue. So at this point, the speaker starts talking, and then after, you know, a paragraph, the listener mirrors back. And I really encourage the listener to mirror back the same words, like a parrot, the same words that the speaker said. And this has two benefits. Number one, we know that when we repeat something, we remember it better. Number two, for the speaker, this is very soothing and comforting to hear their own words being said back at them. There is a sense of, wow, they really heard me. And I help. You know, I'm there. Some people do better, others don't, and that's fine. It's not a competition. So the speaker keeps speaking, and I have them stick to one topic. And usually for the first exercise, I ask them to pick not the hardest issue that they're just facing. I ask them to pick an issue that's kind of difficult, but not hugely, just for practice sake. So the speaker keeps saying everything that's on his or her mind about that issue, why they're bothered by it, what the feelings are, what they would like to, and how long, and everything. And the listener just keeps listening back. At that point, once the speaker says, okay, I'm done, said everything I had to say, and the listener basically says back, asks, did I get that? And encourage the speaker to say more. So is there more? Mm-hmm. Then once that's done, then we go into the summarizing stage. So now the listener is going to kind of bring a summary of what everything he or she heard. Just kind of they can add some of their words, but no judgment, no assumptions, no questions, no nothing. Really just a summary. And check back in with the listener, with the speaker, if that's it. Did I get it? Did I forget anything? Is there another piece? Sometimes the speaker remembers another aspect of the conversation where they might say, oh, I actually forgot something. Great. Then we go back to step number one. So then the speaker expresses what they had to express and the listener mirrors back. Then after the summary is done, I come in and I ask the speaker what the main emotion is regarding that issue. And let's say they say I'm angry with the situation. Like, okay, then I ask them, what is the first time in their lives that they felt that kind of anger, that specific kind of anger? And it's very interesting, Julianne. 9 out of 10 times they will bring up something that happened to them as a child between the ages of 7 and 10. Those ages are very formative,
right?
Those years. And they bring that up, and at that point, it tends to be something that brings up emotions, strong emotions. Some people tear up, but you can clearly see that they're moved by that. And I closely observe the listener in that moment, because that's that moment where I kind of realize, do they have empathy or not? And most times, if the couple is really willing to work, the listener, their heart suddenly gets, you know, melts. They feel for the other person. So they might reach out. They want to touch them. They want to hold them. They want to do something. So then I have the speaker just tell me a little bit what happened, what is that, you know, original pain. And that piece helps us understand that sometimes, and that goes back to that question you asked in the beginning about resolving your personal issues in a relationship, mm-hmm. that sometimes we have wounds that have been created in childhood, and our partner is going to trigger those wounds, not knowing that they're triggering them.
Exactly. But, yeah. And then hopefully the person will eventually come to that insight of, oh, it's really not the situation in present day. It's not the person that I care about. It's something from the past that has not been resolved yet. And what do I do? I mean, because some people would just brush it off and just, well, whatever, and then still try to blame it on the other person. And really the key for us is to get them back to, this is a childhood issue, and let's work on resolving this. and expressing this and clearing this off of your psyche.
Exactly. And one of the reasons why that person might react so strongly and is because it is such an old issue and an old wound. So if the person is open and willing to share at this point, then the listener suddenly also has a insight and realizes, and it's like, wow, you know, now I understand on a different level. And it's hard to get to that level if our reptilian brain is activated, because we don't then, we won't feel safe enough to open up. So the reason also we do that back and forth is to kind of hold on to the hold those emotions, calm them down, not let them come up, not let the reptilian brain get activated. Because every time the listener speaks back, the speaker needs to take a breath. Every time the speaker is speaking, the listener is paying attention. So our prefrontal cortex is constantly active during that process and does not get shut out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then
so
there's
then the next step.
The mirror neurons, yeah. Too, that exactly. That is triggered when we are having a close or a deep conversation with somebody where, you know, one person does something, the other person just may imitate like the tearing up or the same muscle, the activation. That's what happens with those mirror neurons. So I always think that that's fascinating too, because I love their neuroscience part of psychology. I'm way into that and hoping to do some, you know, shows up the road on a little more in depth on this. But as you were saying before, the next step for you is?
Yes, at this point, when mirror neurons have been activated and the listener is in that empathic mode, comes the validation step. So at this point, the listener can speak freely, and I ask the listener and say, does it make sense that your partner feels the way he or she feels? And if the dialogue has been well done, the listener will say, oh my God, yes, it makes sense. And then you say, so tell him or her why. And then they say in their words, you know, it really makes sense you feel that way because your past, or because I don't notice, or whatever that is. And in that moment, you can see the speaker really feeling validated and held emotionally and understood. And there is really a healing that happens, not only from what's happening in the couple, but quite frequently also healing from that past wound. So in a way, your partner can help you heal from past wounds, but there needs to be a sense of safety, emotional safety, for that to happen. So that is an awesome step. For me as a counselor, I love watching that moment, because it really brings the couple together, and you can see the bonding, and you can see the intimacy, and you can see a lot of the issues at that point are not that important, and the connection really prevails.
And then it may rekindle what they had originally, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's this new level of caring and understanding and loving for this person. And it's so wonderful that they're here with me to witness what I may not have ever told somebody else in my entire life.
Yes, and that can create such a strong bond. And, you know, when we talk about intimacy can be broken down into me see. So I allow you to look into me, especially those parts of me that I'm not very proud of, or I'm ashamed of, or I'm not perfect. And we become very human in that moment. So it's really a great, great moment in the process. So yeah, once the validation happened and there's a sense of empathy, then we kind of go really into a more problem-solving place, where we ask the speaker and say, how can the listener help you? What can the listener do so you won't feel that activated, so you won't feel that hurt, so you won't feel that anger? And we ask the speaker to come up with three different options. You know, listener, you can do A, you can do B, you can do C. And then the listener will look at those options and needs to realistically assess those and be able to say, I like them. I like A, I like B, I like C, or I don't think I'll be able to do those, but how about D? And we're really in this, you know, let's figure this out. But at this point, conversation is so much easier because they're really trying to come to a place of common understanding. So once the couple figures out, okay, you know, what I really need, I just need you when you come home to hug me. That's all I need. I know that you might be stressed. You don't need to talk to me. I just need you to come home and hug me. Can you do that? And the listener might say, oh, absolutely. No big deal. I can do that. Great. So now we have a goal. Now we have something to work on. And that's kind of how they go home. And I encourage them to do that. And then we might assess the next session. If we have enough time, we reverse the dialogue. So now the speaker can be the listener and the listener the speaker. It really depends on how much time the conversation took. And that really varies from couple to couple. And I warn them in the beginning. I say, you know, we might be able to have both of you be both roles in one session, maybe not, but I'll make sure that at least in two sessions we have both of you being able to be speakers and listeners. And usually I end the session then with an appreciation. So I ask them to voice something they appreciate about their partner to their partner, and I have the partner mirror it back and say thank you. And I also encourage them to do that every day. Show your partner, let them know what you appreciate. So easy to see what's wrong, and it takes an extra effort to see what's right.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I think we just get so into, we get so used to complaining about things, you know, this isn't right, that isn't right and stuff. And we do start taking each other for granted after a while. And it's sad to see, because this is, you know, who we share our lives with. This is, yeah. You know, our intimate partner is that, for attachment, is the second in line of being attached to one or both of your parents or whoever raised you. That is how important having a good, healthy, intimate relationship is as an adult, because it can do much curative work on a much deeper level, as long as we allow it and as long as we start working on it and communicate. And yeah, and come to, you know, therapists such as Eliana, and when we're stuck, and say, you know, we need some help. Please help us to learn to communicate better so we can start building this relationship and have a life together.
Yes.
So how many sessions in general do you take a couple through with doing Imago?
Oh, Julianne, there is really not a one set answer, because it depends. There's so many variables. It depends on where the couple is at, what the issues are, how severe the issues are, how willing they are to work at the issues. So there's so many variables. I mean, I have had couples that after three sessions, things improved tremendously, and I have had couples that I work with a whole year. And interestingly enough, I remember one couple that I worked with for a year, and they did work hard, and they actually got to the conclusion that they're better off divorced, separated, than together. But they got to that place very calmly. They were able to get to that place where they can say, I respect that person. As a human being, I don't hold any other strong emotions. And if they have children, and they do have children, that we can co-parent, but still respect each other. So in a way, even though the relationship didn't remain, they were able to separate in a healthy way as well.
That's important, because there's so many people that have bitter divorces and bitter breakups, and then they take that energy into the next relationship with them, or they just don't have relationships for a while. They just take a break, and then they start seething in anger and depression and all those deep, dark places. So I you know, what is your take on a lot of couples just go to counseling when they're getting closer towards divorce?
Oh my gosh, yes. I wish couples would come earlier. Most of the couples come when the whole house is on fire, not only one room. Sometimes the issues are just so big and so difficult and so hard, and there is not much left in the couplehood to draw from. And I do ask my couples, are we doing marital counseling for you guys to stay together, or are we doing divorce counseling? Because these are two different kinds of counseling, and we need to define that. And many, many times the couple knows it, that it's done, they're done, it's over, but nobody wants to be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be the person that's going to close the coffin. So they kind of keep waiting for the other to either mess up or say something, and then it's way overdue. Or they stay together for the children, but there's really nothing else left. So I had a couple actually dissolve their marriage in the office, inside my office, where one partner actually left and the other stayed. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult for the one staying. But yeah, sometimes we need to define that and work with a couple, but it can be done too. And if they have children, it's very important, because they're going to be co-parents for quite a while.
Yes, for the rest of the child's life in one form or another. Yeah. Most definitely. And that has to be handled with care, you know, because otherwise they get the children involved in between the couple or the prior couple, and it just gets so messy.
It's not fair. They pick up the tab.
Right. Right. So, Eliana, when we come back from break, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the seven stages of relationships. And then we're going to wrap up the Psych 101.
Are you searching for answers and insight to life issues? Is the behavior of family or friends questionable or concerning? Find tips and possible solutions from the convenience of your own PC, cell phone, or tablet at therapycable.com. Therapy Cable has the most comprehensive library of contemporary therapy videos online. Help may be as easy as a few clicks away. Therapy Cable offers comprehensive therapy videos ranging from addiction to self-care and contact information for qualified providers. Find the answers to your life challenges at therapycable.com.
Welcome back to Psych 101 with Julianne Good and Eliana Herdani. We are talking about loving and healthy couples this evening. And Eliana, I'd like to know about the seven stages of relationships.
Yes. So the seven stages, we actually talked somewhat about the first two and the last two ones, not so much about the ones in the middle, but the seven stages are infatuation, fantasy, discovery, disillusion, fine-tuning, union, or separation. So the first two ones, the infatuation and the fantasy, we talked a little bit about the love potion, the being in love. So that's that moment where we are blinded by love and the other person is wonderful, Prince Charming, my princess, they're perfect and they are just in love and in lust and flooded by all these hormones. This is a good time to read Helen Fisher. She's an anthropologist and she researched at length that stage in a relationship. So it's good information. So it's a good time. Enjoy. Have fun. It lasts up to 2 years. It can last. Do not make life-changing decisions during that time. Don't get married. Don't have children. Don't leave your job, your career, your city. Don't. Just kind of enjoy, have fun, build good memories, but do not make life-changing decisions during that time. Then, after that period, that's when the discovery stage comes in. That's when we really start discovering each other for real. You know, we kind of, oh, I thought you liked Mexican food. Well, I just said I liked it because I knew you would like it. I really don't like it. Okay, then. So why did I buy the Mexican food cookbook? So things like that start coming. And hopefully, if you did build a good foundation in the first two stages, you have a lot to draw from because you will need that during that discovery. And if you come to that stage with a sense of curiosity, not animosity, that will be very helpful. And that's where the Imago Dialogue comes in very, very handy, where we can ask, well, tell me a little bit more about how you think and why do you think that way and where does it come from? There's a wonderful book called 1001 Questions to Ask Before You Get Married. And I even tell my married couples to buy that book because it's very comprehensive and it just gives you some ideas of some questions to ask to really find out who that person is. And a lot of topics like finances, in-laws, you know, even children, some people don't even talk about them because it's like, it's uncomfortable. I don't want to break the mood. But those are very important topics if you really want to stay in this relationship and make it last. The next stage is disillusion. It kind of comes along with that where we realize, they are not the person who they are. What happens a lot is in couples, what I see is one person might say, well, he or she changed a lot. I didn't. I'm the same, which is really not true. We changed as well, but it's really hard to see. So in that moment, in that stage, working on self-awareness is important. Maybe having your own counselor with whom you can talk about your own things. Looking into past relationships, that's when those unhealthy patterns, if we haven't looked at them, previous unhealthy patterns in our family or in previous relationships will come out. So this is a good time to look into ourselves and also work a little bit more on our individuality, because in the beginning we want to stay together, spend every minute together. So we stop our hobbies, we stop our interests, we stop doing what we enjoy, we stop seeing some friends maybe, we just want to be with that person. So this is a good time to kind of go back a little bit to ourselves, like pick up that hobby you left or focus a little more on your career or kind of bring a little bit more balance into other areas of your life. And if we survive that stage, and they're not linear, they come and go, some come before others in a way, but they are all in there in some shape or form. Mm-hmm. Then we get to the fine tuning, and the fine tuning is kind of fun. It's a stage where we kind of know the other person pretty well. We know what they're made of. We know how they think. And now we're trying to adjust to each other. So the things we think alike, awesome. The things we're different, we kind of need to fine-tune, you know? I'm going to tell you a little story about me and my husband because I think it describes very well that stage. And it kind of happened when we got together. It started, but this was a three-conversation issue. We had to have three conversations about that issue until we were able to fine-tune and come to a solution. So my husband, he's military, and when I met him and I stayed at his place for the first time, I noticed that I would get a fresh towel every day. And I thought, wow, this is nice. It's kind of like hotel service. At the same time, I thought, ooh, that's a lot of washing, you know, washing all these towels. And he would grab a fresh towel for himself, too, every day. So I kind of touched and said, hey, you know, I was wondering. Well, no, actually, first I went on the internet. I said, oh, my God, let me look what people out there are doing. What's normal?
What's normal?
Because I was changing my towels once a week, and I thought that's, you know, you're coming out the shower, you're clean. So most people do change their towels once a week. So I'm like, okay, I'm in the normal range. He's not. So I touched on the subject, but I noticed he got a little, you know, upset and irritated. And I thought, let me drop it. Not that big of a deal. We're not living together, so that's fine. So once we decided to live together, the conversation came up again. And it went okay. I mean, he said, I don't know. I've done this for a long time, and that's how I do it. I have no idea why. And I said, okay, but how about the soap and the water? And he's like, well, yeah, but on the other hand, I don't know. I feel like using the same towel next day. Okay, drop it. Third conversation, that's when we got to the heart of the issue. He explained to me, and he wasn't even aware of it, but it was through that curiosity and imago dialogue that he was able to figure this out, that when a soldier is deployed, especially to Afghanistan, where there's a lot of sand, when they come back from being out there, sometimes they don't get to shower every day. And if they do, once they clean themselves up, the towel is still full of sand. So you never really get a sense that you're fully clean. So he had to use a fresh towel every day there because the towel was dirty. And that remained. It became a habit, and he just continued that. So once he figured that out, he was actually able to say, oh, now I know where it comes from. So now we change towels every 3 days.
It was compromise stage, right?
Pardon?
Compromise stage.
The compromise. So that kind of little story is to illustrate that fine-tuning where, you know, it's not going to be my way, it's not his way, but we found our way. And it works.
Yes, and it's after the conversation. Right.
Yeah, and it's as simple as sometimes towels. You know, these little daily things, they get in the way. They really do. The way you place your napkin, the trash, the dishes, the laundry, all these, and we think they're automatic. Sometimes they need to be talked about. So that fine-tuning stage is kind of about that. And if we do that well, that's when we move into the union stage where it's, I know that person. I know them well. I know when I can count on them. I know when what their strengths are. I know what their weaknesses are. I love them for who they are. They're there when I need them. They're able to listen to me. It's that stage when you go with your partner to a party and something happens at a party and you look at each other and you know exactly what he or she's thinking without having to say a word.
It's that beautiful stage of knowing.
Yes, you become a team and you work well together. And even though there might be challenges and issues, but the foundation is thick and firm and it won't bring down the whole house. It might bring down a wall, but not the whole house. And you worked to figure out how to manage conflict and those challenges. And if that doesn't happen, then you go to separation, which sometimes is inevitable, but hopefully can be done in a way that not a lot of emotional, ideally no emotional residue is left. And you can, you know, leave the relationship and be okay, which is very rarely.
I know. It can be pretty messy for a lot of people. But hopefully you get to a stage where you're separating amicably, and you can say, okay, thank you for having made my life better, you know, but I need to move on because this isn't working anymore. And then learn what, you know, what did that this relationship have to teach me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the best way to break up. It does happen. And I've had some breakups like that, and you know, it's still painful, but at least you know, get to the stage where you get rid of the emotional residue before you move on to the next relationship.
Yes, it's important to do what we call a relationship autopsy. You kind of look at your previous relationships. What was my part? What was his or her part? What did I contribute for this relationship not to work? And what do I need to change? And go about and change it, and so you don't have to bring it into the next relationship.
Exactly. And Ileana, as we are wrapping up, can you let the listeners know how to contact you if they would like to do so?
Yes, they can go to my website, lifeaspects.com, and there is a contact information there, and they can call me, email me, and that's the best way to get in touch with me.
Mm-hmm. And she also Skypes.
Yes.
One of the best inventions ever.
Yes, I do Skype counseling. I have quite a few clients in London, in Germany, in Brazil that I Skype with.
Yes, you are quite the international traveler too, which, mm-hmm. Yes, that's great. So anything that you would like to add over the next minute to kind of wrap things up?
I really would like to add that do a prenuptial agreement. And even if you're ready in a relationship, do a prenuptial agreement. Because if you have to get to that stage of separation, it really makes things much easier. So that will be, and do a prenuptial counseling. Do some prenuptial counseling.
That's good advice, because I think a lot of people just kind of rush into marriage. They get swept up in the romanticism of it, and then they don't realize that it does take work to build a solid relationship. And also, I'd like to add to Ileana that if you do start having problems in your relationship, go to counseling early. Don't wait until you are ready to separate or divorce, because by that point, it's almost too late. So,
I agree with you.
Yes. So thank you so much for being with us this evening on Psych One-on-One. And I hope you have a lovely evening.
Thank you, Julianne. Lovely evening to you too.
Thank you. And I would like to reach out to the listeners. If you would like to contact me, my business number is 562-209-1837. My counseling office is down in Irvine, California. And my email address is jgoode8@verizon.net. You can also friend me at Psych One-on-One on Facebook. I would love to hear from you. If you have any issues, please contact me. Or if you have an idea for a future show, I would love to hear your ideas. So just keep in touch, and also check out the other wonderful shows that we have on weplayradio.com. I think you could be really surprised and very engaged. We have some great hosts that we've taken from Skid Row Studios. And we are very excited to be doing this with our executive producer, Jeremy Hansen. We love you. Thank you so much for bringing us on board and for strengthening up our programs. And thank you so much for continuing to listen to Psych One-on-One. We have almost 100 programs. We have over 100 programs on iTunes Store. And also, please subscribe to weplayradio.com and keep on listening. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Bye now.